if Abraham had a song to sing, it would go like this. Here I am, Lord. It is I, Lord. I have heard you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, if you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart. Here I am, Lord. To get the full effect of the Abraham and Isaac drama, I think we need to picture the son not as a child, but as a young man. Jewish tradition imagines Isaac as physically mature and vigorous, able to fight off being bound by his elderly father, yet willing to surrender to him. Why? They're at a crossroads, at a moment in the relationship between father and man-child, or mother and woman-child, when power over gives way to power with, if the parent is wise and the child is willing. It's when an acceptance of strength and fragility on both sides leads them to offer each other mutual respect, if they can, if they're courageous, if they have the long view. Isaac might be 16 or 17 years old in the narrative, at the threshold of adulthood and poised to make Abraham's vision of being the father of a great nation a reality. Abraham finally has what he's always wanted, but it's in the form of a human being who will make his own choices, not as a sheep in one of his countless flocks, which he can direct however he wants. That's why this story is so compelling to us. Notice the narrative fulcrum is the generational shift in this scene of almost sacrifice. Isaac has to carry the ball now. It's inevitable biologically, but that doesn't mean that the emotional and spiritual handoff is easy. This son is now old enough himself to father a daughter or a son, and soon enough that son will be a father, and so on and so on, which means I may have a claim on the present, but the future is someone else's. The future is always someone else's. And you know, children learn by watching how the adults in the room act. For a man whose dream is to lead a tribe of people, the patriarch's vulnerability at this moment wouldn't be lost on Abraham. He might not have to do it today, but someday soon he'll have to let Isaac go. He'll have to take his hands off his son's increasingly broad shoulders and let him find his own way in the world. I believe this scene conveys the patriarch waking up one morning and realizing that in order to achieve his heart's desire, he has to give his heart away. Now, the binding of Isaac is the stuff of nightmares, and readers have tried a number of ways to make sense of it. Woody Allen uses humor, and as with most jokes, there's truth in his lighthearted touch, the gospel according to Woody. And Abraham awoke in the middle of the night and said to his only son Isaac, I've had a dream where the voice of the Lord saith that I must sacrifice my only son, so put your pants on. And Isaac trembled and said, so what did you say? I mean, when God brought this whole thing up. What am I going to say? Abraham said. I'm standing there at 2 a.m. in my underwear talking to the creator of the universe. Should I argue? Well, did he say he wants me to be sacrificed? Isaac asked his father. But Abraham said, look, do the faithful ask questions? And I didn't want to bother your mother. She's been edgy lately and she was asleep. Now let's go. I've got a big day tomorrow. Now, there's a tendency to literalize this story from the Hebrew Scriptures and to understand it as a test. God asks Abraham to build an altar and to sacrifice his son on it. And then, satisfied by his action, an angel swoops in and stays the father's hand just as the knife is poised to slit Isaac's throat. But if God asks us to sacrifice our children or anyone else's children or take in the name their life in the name of religion or faith, then I'm out. Game over. It's more likely that this story asserts the moment when the relatively young Hebrew religion broke ranks with its Canaanite neighbors, saying once and for all, the God we worship, that God may require us to sacrifice our hearts, but that God will never ask us to sacrifice our children. I would argue that the binding of Isaac takes place in the landscape of dreams. Listen again to the evocative language of the story. God asks Abraham to go to the mythical land of Moriah, a place on no contemporaneous map, a spot that scholars still can only speculate about. Then he's told to make the burnt offering vaguely on, quote, one of those mountains. With no mention of his wife Sarah, Abraham rises early in the morning. We all know men don't get up without a little help from their wives. There's no mention of Sarah in this story. On the third day of his journey, he sees, quote, a place in the distance to which he and Isaac walk alone. Then the ram appears coincidentally at the critical moment of decision. Finally, in a telling omission, Abraham walks down the mountain alone with no mention of Isaac. This is the stuff of dreams. Abraham is working something out here. And if we have ears to hear it, his struggle is as familiar as our own questions about being children of parents and parents of children. The real setting of this story is the father's anxiety as his son becomes a man, when he wonders, what does he need to do and be for this man-child at this critical moment of transition? Naomi Rosenblatt, who's a psychotherapist and biblical scholar, writes, "The story shines a spotlight on the parent-child dynamic in all of its complexity and suggests that while we will be called to make sacrifices for our children, we have to resist the temptation to ever turn the tables and sacrifice our children for ourselves." Do you hear the difference? We're asked to sacrifice for our children, but we are never asked to sacrifice our children for ourselves. A father may feel he's providing for his children by working weekends and evenings when in fact he's depriving them of what they need most: access to him, an approachable, available, accessible father. In order to give our children the love and guidance they need, we might have to sacrifice our own personal glory and pride of place. That's the sacrifice we're asked to give. How are courage and humility taught? But by our modeling it for the ones that we serve. We're all to some degree susceptible to the temptation of making our children over in our own image. In the purported best interests of the child, fathers can feel pressure for children to join the family business or to be in a certain profession. We can pressure our children to do that. Mothers might raise their daughters to be the popular teenager or the successful professional that they could not ever be. When we exhort our children to gain admission to prestigious colleges, how much are we driven by pride and how much by what the kids really need? Think about it. Perhaps God is warning Abraham against any overweening zeal, religious or otherwise, reminding him that even devotion to God, when taken to the extreme, is idolatrous and self-serving. You know, it turns out it is much easier to pray to God but not serve the folks around us, to say our prayers but leave our children vulnerable, needing us. This story, a precursor to the later teachings of the prophets, tells us that whatever we do in the service of God is an empty ritual unless it benefits another human being. Abraham discovers that what he needs to do is to offer himself to his son and then to get out of his way. Significantly, Abraham's response to the challenge is articulated here in a single Hebrew word, hineni. Here I am. Here I am. Here I am is the language of covenant, of deep relationship, of trust. In another story, you'll remember young Samuel says that when he's ready to listen to God's call and to respond to it, "Here I am." And in this one, old Abraham says it three times in his horrific dream of binding his son Isaac. "Here I am." When an infant stirs in her bedside cradle, the mother calls out, "I'm here." When a lover calls out in passion or need, the partner responds, "Here I am." When someone turns to us for a favor, large or small, a true friend responds, "I'm here for you." What do you say to a child who's scared? "Here I am." What do you say when she's overwhelmed by school or the kids on the playground, by deep water or a dark room or the doctor? "Here I am." What do you say to your spouse when she's gotten bad news, or to your partner when he's lost his job? What do you say to your aging mother who's slowly receding from you and consciousness, whose eyes every now and then flash fear or worry or longing? "Here I am." A few years ago, I worked at a camp in the mountains of North Carolina. The theme that week was the good and bad of competition, and we used the upcoming Olympics that year as our jumping off point. One hot afternoon, we played messy games on the field with slip and slide races through water and baby shampoo. It seemed like a good idea. We had a relay with bursting balloons and shaving cream, and get this, nails attached to our helmets. That really almost didn't come off right. And a version of an egg toss which employed pantyhose filled with baking flour. For 2 days, we divided 160 teenagers into teams of red and yellow shirts and fomented tension between them in order to make a larger point about conflict resolution and affirming each other's gifts. The most meaningful moment for me was a healing service which came at the end of all our wars and races. An athletic young man, probably 16 or 17 years old, the same age as Isaac in today's story, came forward and asked me to lay hands on him and pray. As his friends circled around him, he told me that his mother had left him with a relative 10 years ago, and that he ached for her presence and her touch. "I've done all I can, he said. "I've written her letters, I've called her on the phone, but I guess she doesn't want me." And finally he whispered, "I just wish I had her." So I held him, and he cried, and his friends put their hands on his broad, heaving shoulders. And you know the only words that I knew to say? "Here I am." What do we have to do to say, "Here I am," to all of God's children? Well, if that feels like too much, let's just start with all the children in Baltimore County and Baltimore City. Or if that's too much, let's think about just the kids in your house. How can we live the courageous dream of saying and being and living, "Here I am"? What do we need to do to ensure that no child is ever sacrificed at the altar of someone's selfishness or misguided ambition? How should we marshal our resources in the present, our influence, our access, so that the boys and girls from Harlem Park to Roland Park have a future? We can't take a person's pain away. We know that. But we can stand with him in the midst of his darkest night. That's what Abraham discovers in his story with Isaac. He figures out that he needs to say, "Here I am," to be the adult in the room, and then to offer the support he can, and then get out of the way. It's what God does for us through Jesus. And it's what you and I can do for our children, and for somebody else's children, and for each other, and the world. What can we be and do and say? "Here I am." Amen.